Good morning and welcome to Jew in the City Speaks with your host, Allison Josephs, also known as Jew in the City. In this organization, and not everybody realizes that this podcast is actually connected to a nonprofit called Jew in the City. Our mission, our founding mission, was to break down negative stereotypes about Orthodox Jews in the journey of using social media to challenge the stereotypes. We met people who had real lived experiences that were negative experiences from Orthodox Jews. That led us to found our Makom branch, which helps people from these backgrounds find a happy and healthy place within the community. After learning about the stories from our Makom members, and we have several hundred since our founding in 2015, we generally keep around 300 members. We heard about issues that needed addressing. And our feeling is that instead of kind of going to the headlines and, writing the tell-all memoir about how horrible everything is, our approach is to behind the scenes find leadership that we can share challenges with and work on systemic changes. And that is our Tikkun branch. Our founding branch, once we had two other branches, we named Keter to restore the Keter Shem Tov, the crown of the good name of the community. And in the last few years, we've taken this mission of improving people's opinion of Orthodox Jews to a broader mission of improving people's opinions on all Jews in Hollywood. That is through our Jew in the City Hollywood Bureau. Now, everything that we've been doing, like probably most Jews, has been deeply affected since October 7th. Kind of everything has gone on its head since the worst attack on Jews since the Holocaust made people hate Jews even more. I was talking to my sister-in-law who recently said that she thinks that what anti-Semitism causes even more anti-Semitism, that, once people hate Jews, sort of there's permission to hate Jews even more. And we're pretty interested in how this hatred of Jews is affecting Jews and their journeys in all different directions. And we have an interesting man joining us today. And his story kind of touches probably all of our branches in different ways. But we connected him because of the advocacy work we're doing since October 7th. His name is Zusha Golden. He is a celebrity photographer, but his name is Zusha. And so that's not the average name of a celebrity photographer. And that's because he has a bit of an interesting story. So, Zusha, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Allison. I love what you do, and I've been following your work for some time. And I think we actually only really connected post October 7th, as we all kind of fell into, I mean, for myself, fell into the advocacy space. And then, so it's really nice to be on here, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. So, I think we have to first answer the question, how did you get the name Zusha? Where did you grow up? How did you grow up Jewishly?
Right. Okay. So my parents are immigrants from, my mom's from South Africa and my father's from Ukraine. They're both Baal Tshuva, which means they found religion later on in life. They moved to New York and I grew up Chabad in Crown Heights, Brooklyn, the youngest of 11. And my parents just really loved the story of like Zusha von Apollo, who was one of the greatest rabbis back in Russia or Eastern Europe. And I actually have two names. The first name is Avram, but I go by Zosha. I've always resonated more with that name for some reason. But so that's kind of how I got my name. And yes, I was born and raised Chabad, and I'm still very, I very much identify with being Chabad, even though it's complicated because I might not be as religious, but it's kind of like you never really leave Chabad, if that makes sense.
Oh, I know. My husband was raised Chabad. Yes, although,
Wow.
but he was not raised in Crown Heights. So, he was not raised, I think, with the same level of education. He never went to Chabad school. He was raised out of town. But his parents are
Interesting.
also Baalei Tshuva. So,
Where
I think
is
it's,
he from? Like, which Chabad
oh,
community?
he grew up in Palo Alto.
Very cool. I have a
So,
couple.
and the thing is that there was not much of a Chabad community out there. And he's also had, a journey. Look, I think a lot of people have journeys. That's the truth. So when did you leave Crown Heights and was it, you said you're still connected to Chabad, maybe culturally or, in your neshama, that sort of a thing. Was the leaving of Crown Heights a little bit of a break with sort of the strict observance, so they those things come together, or?
Well, I definitely have religious trauma from growing up in Crown Heights. I mean, let's be real. You know, you have many different types of people and families and the community as a whole. There's a lot of beautiful things and it's really great. On the other hand, it can be very intense. Like I remember one time I was walking down the street and I always had, you know, like big hair in the front, fluffy hair. Since I was a kid, like I have a, I don't know if it's a chub or a cowlick, right? So I always had that. And I was walking down the street and this rabbi came up to me and put his hand on my head and like trying to force it down and telling me how bad it is and all that. And, you know, obviously in hindsight, you know, you don't really care. But in the moment, it was very, I don't know if the word is triggering, but it was very angering. And I felt like I didn't have a sense of autonomy or I was doing something so terrible when it was, it's just a haircut. Like, you know, it's not that deep.
But let me just interrupt you. I mean, your body belongs to you. That's, you know, a thing that we tell children. And unfortunately, when there are people that don't get that type of sort of bodily autonomy and cross lines, it is triggering. And I think that even if it's something as simple as hair, our bodies belong to us. And unfortunately, people that do off things, especially when they're in positions of religious authority, can give us a sour taste on the experience. You know, my sense from dealing with our Mako members is that it's never just one thing. It's sort of like a series of things. And, you know, obviously some things are more or less personal, but I think, you know, there are off people that exist in the world, but when they do it under the guise of religion, especially as religious figures, it can taint a person's experience within the community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, so you're absolutely right there, and it's true. That's I hadn't even thought about that element until now, but you're right. He had no place, you know, actually touching me and whatnot. But yeah, no. So when I moved to LA, it wasn't so much like a break from Crown Heights or Chabad or Ultra Orthodoxy or anything. It was more, I just this is my dream. It's what I always wanted to do, and I in my life I was kind of forced to do this because you only really grow and change, I find, when you're uncomfortable with where you're at. And I was very uncomfortable with where I was at. And so it was around March 1st, 2020, which very interesting timing to move across the country and start something new. But obviously it all worked out for the best.
So I mean, that was only a few years ago, and a lot of people go to LA to try to reach celebrities, and most don't. So, kind of, who are some of the most impressive people you've worked with, and how did you make it happen?
I'm trying to think of like the biggest names. Okay, Selena Gomez, Samuel L. Jackson, Ben Stiller, Courteney Cox. I'll just leave with that.
No, that's amazing.
And thank you. And it was very hard moving to California, and then I had a really big opportunity where I photographed the D'Amelio family from TikTok. They were like Charli D'Amelio. She had like 150 million followers, and so she was very, you know, in the peak of COVID and whatnot. So I photographed them, and then I had a lot of opportunity, but then it all like all the doors shut right in front of me because everyone went into lockdown. So that was very difficult. And then in 2022, I think it was already 2022, I went onto LinkedIn and I just started connecting with as many executives as possible, and it was really networking because I've been doing photography for 5, 6 years, and I'm always perfecting my craft, right? So as long as you're honing your skill and your talent, then on your front you're good. But I don't believe life is a meritocracy, and you're not going to get something just because you're good or you're talented. You have to kind of create your own opportunity and create your own luck and network. And who knows you and who's willing to give you opportunity is how you're going to succeed. So that's kind of my strategy. Just a lot of in-person networking, a lot of social media networking, but it's authentic networking. I feel like there's a very fine line between social climbing and between networking. And I think it's if you lead with value and you don't just establish relationships based off of who the other person is or what they can give you. If you it's if you establish it based off if you actually also like them as a person, and if you want to engage with them, and you want to conduct business with them, and you want to just be around them. Like, I will never ever be friends with someone just because of who they are or what they can offer. That never served me, and I know it won't. So, it's really a
And
lot of.
nowadays, there's a lot of people that have celebrity, but they don't share our values or like us as our people. So
By the
they're
way, it's
probably.
true. It's so true. I'm so. Whenever I'm encountering a new opportunity, I'm always like, okay, wait, who is this person? Do I even want to be associated with them? Not in like a negative way. It's just it's very, if someone doesn't want your existence, then I don't really want to associate with them. Does that make sense?
Completely. Were there any moments you would say of, you did the Hashtag-less, you put out the effort, and since you're having a yeshiva background, we can say lefun sara agra, that according to the struggle is the reward. So you put your effort in, and you were rewarded. But I heard this beautiful idea from actually a woman that got a deal on Shark Tank that I had on. Mrs. Goldfarb's vegan deli. I'm trying to remember her first name. But she told me there's an acrostic for mazal, which is makom, place, zman, time. So you have to be in the right place at the right time, but you have to be la'asot. You have to be doing, you have to be putting your effort out. Would you say that any of the efforts that you put out also came with sort of like a bit of mazal, or sort of like kind of a person, you know what I'm saying, were there any moments where you said like this feels like divine providence, like hashgacha, when you found yourself in the right place at the right time as you were doing these efforts?
Absolutely. I think I was doing everything I can possibly do on the input, and you can only control the input. Something which this past year has taught me is that you can't control the output. You have to relinquish control, and you can't control or change anything or anyone except for yourself and for how you operate. And so I've definitely seen moments of serendipity when I was just like, okay, I did everything I could. Now it's just up to mazel, really. And so I've definitely seen that. And you need that in our industry. Like,
For sure.
you have so much of that yourself, I'm sure. So it's
So let's talk about October 7th. I mean, obviously, every Jewish person listening is affected by this. How did October 7th affect your relationship to Judaism? How did it affect your career? Kind of what I imagine, there's sort of the before and the after for
yes.
many of us, but what changed for you?
Maybe this is harsh to say, but I found that after October 7th, there were two types of Jews: the ones who became like good Jews and the ones who actually became proud Jews. And I'm very blessed that, based on my background, based on my own personality, I've had this zest to become more of a proud Jew. And so I was in Israel on October 7th. I was there with friends and some family, just over all the holidays. And I remember getting home from like Simchat Torah in the 5 a.m. in the morning, and I wake up at 7:45 a.m. I was in Jerusalem, and there's sirens, and people are freaking out. And then over the next few hours, you found out a lot more, and just seeing what's happening is very intense. But October 7th really changed a lot for me. I found myself suddenly in the being an activist, when I was always just an artist telling stories. And now I'm still an artist telling stories, just kind of different type of stories, if that makes sense. More meaningful stories, if I were
Yeah.
there to.
I'll tell you, it's interesting. We deal with at Makom, with many people with backgrounds similar to yours, and obviously every journey is unique, and also there's a lot of shared space. What I found in, with many of our Makom members is that anger, that feeling triggered, that, the stuff that exists in the home dynamics and the school dynamics of the rabbi dynamics, that all like still matters. But then when the onslaught of hate is coming from outside of the community, somehow that stuff matters less. Somehow it's this sense of, I don't have space to be as angry at what was done wrong to me by members of maybe my family or in my, yeshiva or my community, because we're kind of in a existential threat right now. And at the end of the day, I'm a Jew, and I'll live as a Jew, and I'll die as a Jew, and we have to somehow stick together. Does that kind of describe?
Absolutely. No, you're right. Although I have the religious trauma, I've never been the type of person to like rebel or to, be angry or to like, I very much always, I love Judaism and I love everything about it. Well, not everything about it, but I love a lot about it, and I'm very much involved in everything. Like, my religious observance might be less, but I'm still very much involved, and I always have been. Like, I never ran away or was like, oh, this is, I hate this, or I never had that. I feel like I've had the emotional maturity, if that's the word, I don't know, to like kind of see the bigger picture and understand that it's a lot more nuanced than just, oh, I had some bad experiences, now I hate this. Like, I think there's room to either it's a cognitive dissonance, or I understand there's a room to hold both things at once, and that's okay. And my own time, I'll figure it out and heal on my journey. But yeah, no, October 7th, it was, that's, it was being in Israel on October 7th and what happened after, which is what inspired my project and what made me, say, okay, we have to stand up. So
Okay, so
that.
now tell me, so that was your segue. So tell me about your project that you launched since October 7th.
Okay, so with the help of my friend Shani Sousa, who's the CEO of Jews Talk Justice, and the Jewish Journal, who was my media partner, I launched this movement, which is called Artists Against Antisemitism. And what it is it's a coalition of artists and celebrities and influencers and just high-profile individuals who are coming together to use art to combat antisemitism. And there's a few goals that we have with it, which I'll tell you a little later, but I'll kind of tell you just what inspired it and how. So I do photography, right? And part of being a photographer nowadays is not just like, if you want to get clients, you can't just, show posting great photos. You kind of have to become an influencer, if you would, or like a social media person.
You need a
So
brand. Everybody needs a
you need
brand.
a personal brand, right? Exactly. So when I was in Israel, I photographed, I posted two reels on my Instagram where I approached random Israeli girls in the Shuk in Jerusalem. And it was like a 30-second photography challenge where it's like approaching strangers, getting cool photos. I posted on my social media. The first one was October 8th. So it's
Wow.
after, right after. And immediately within hours, I got 700-800 comments saying, Gaz, warm up the ovens, gas the Jews, kill yourself, all the good stuff, And so that obviously angered me even more because I was like, I'm literally in Israel and I'm still there. And I was stuck there for a few days after, having to run to bomb shelters and just being an hour and 50 minutes away from the border itself, where everything happened with Nova, and seeing what's happening all around the diaspora, I was so angered and infuriated. And then I posted the second one, and the same thing, just copious amounts of terrible comments, And so when I got back to the US, I brainstormed and I said, okay, how can I help? Because I have to be in this space, I have to help some way. I can't just go back to old life. And so I came up with this idea, and I approached Shani and then Siri Garber of Platform PR, who I think you might actually know. She's great. She's been a lot of big advocate. And then I came up with a team, which is Menachem Silverstein, Mimi Nadel, Marla Friedson, and the rest of them. And there's so many people that, went into this, and I'm very thankful for all of them. But and we launched our first exhibit, and it's been absolutely surreal. It's been incredible. Had a lot of impact, and we're just getting started.
So where was the exhibit? What artists are against anti-Semitism that are part of your exhibit?
So it premiered online, and we had all of the artists posted on their social medias. But the exhibit was having the artists hold up the real anti-Semitic comments that I received from these two Instagram posts, showing like, look, this is what Jewish youth and Jewish teenagers are around the world are facing, and it's not okay, and we're gonna stand behind them. So we had a one day in person event here in LA, where we launched it, and we raised money for an organization called Kavod Chef, which raises money for Holocaust survivors living in poverty. And it was a beautiful, beautiful launch, and we got a lot of traction online. It was a lot of impact. And some of the names are Deborah Messing, Juliana Margulies, Emmanuel Shrieky, Kennedy Hamilton, a lot of influencers that we all know, part of the space, Akil Jacobs, Montana Tucker, and then also a good friend of mine who's actually the only non-Jewish celebrity to be a part of this. His name is Paul Walter Hauser. He's a really talented actor, and part of the goal with Artists Against Antisemitism is I want to normalize non-Jew celebrities standing up for Jews, because it's st standing against antisemitism should not be political, but it is, and that's one of the goals, is to, really make a space for them, like a sense of community, if that makes sense. And
What kind
so,
of a response have you reached out to other non-Jewish celebrities that have said no, or kind of like, I support you privately, but this would hurt my brand if I was a public Jew supporter?
Yes, it took me half a year to get to make the project happen. I probably sent out hundreds of emails to publicists, hopped on dozens of calls, and even in person. I met a few, a lot of also Jewish celebrities. But like I spoke to this one non-Jewish celebrity. He's like, I support you guys. I think it's an amazing project, but I just don't think it's the smartest idea right now. And I said, I understand. Like, it's controversial. You worked so hard to build up. You don't want to do it. Like, no worries. Although I do think at some point something's got to give. You like, what are your values? What do you stand for? But
Maybe just ask him, like, when they're carting us away, like, will you stand up then? Sort of like, what's the kind of how far will it go? It's insane. Look, for me, I think what makes this all the more enraging is that since 2020, when you had that move out there, we literally learned from so many other movements how the world stands up for everyone else's cause. And diversity and inclusion and speaking up for the people that are in trouble. Like, these were wonderful values that we learned. And I think it makes the experience that we're going through now that much more like betraying. It's like a gut
Absolutely.
punch for all the Jews that marched and, picketed and, hashtagged for everyone else. And now when it's our turn, it's just crickets, except for the one non-Jew.
It's more right, exactly. And it's more than crickets. It's worse, because they're actually marching and hashtagging and picketing against us now. When it's like, make it make sense. Like, there's no logic. It's just very disheartening.
Does that, so for me now, not that I was a person that was struggling with faith. I mean, I wasn't a person that believed until my teenage years. And then once I started to believe, I've, remained observant since then. But I have to tell you, watching the dislogic of the world has actually strengthened my faith. It's, even though it's coming from a bad place and it's scary, there's also a sense of like, well, I guess you're trying to get through to us, God. Like, there must be a bigger picture than everything we're seeing in front of us. How do you grapple with that with your background? Like, does sort of the hatred coming at us from every direction and nothing making sense anymore? Like, where does that, how do you deal with that in terms of your faith?
I hear that. I definitely have a stronger connection, if that makes sense. Like, right after I started putting on, I always tried to, but I started being more stringent about it, where I tried to put on tefillin every day, like just Shema, just to like put it on. And I have a very complicated relationship with faith and God. But I mean, then again, everything about it is complex. But no, it definitely. I've definitely never been prouder, and I've definitely have never been more brave, even though I'm afraid to stand up, and I've never been more inclined to do religious things, if that makes sense, at my own pace.
No, for sure. And let me also just like separate. I think a lot of the Machlis members, and I won't put you on the spot about your background, but a lot of people that we've dealt with, a lot of it was forced on them. It was foisted upon them. There was a sense that love was conditional, or at least it appeared that way. Do this if you want, to be accepted in the community, in the family. Even if it's not said explicitly, there may be some implicit messaging like that. So to be able to say, on my own terms now, I will take this on. For me personally, I've been more careful about saying morning brachos. I was davening every day since I became observant in my teenage years. And when I got pregnant 20 plus years ago with my eldest, and I was, nauseous in the morning and vomiting before I said brachos and ate, it kind of threw off my schedule. And so all throughout raising my children, I was always trying to get back to make sure I say, my morning blessings before I start to eat or start the day. and I had a different sense, you know, more successful, less successful over the years. Since
Right.
October 7th, I've had this sense of I have to create merit for the hostages, for the soldiers, for the people in hospital beds, for the mental anguish, for the rockets that are flying over the heads of, you know, the people of Israel in the north right now, especially for the
Oh, yeah.
Jews around the world who are, you know, being attacked in greater numbers. I have to create greater merit. And I don't know how my small part is going to play a role in sort of the global Jewish merit, but let me stop with my excuses and find a way to, you know, consistently commit. And thank God, I've used a sitter and, you know, been quite consistent since October 7th. Then something I struggle with in terms of faith is, why does it have to come to this? Why does the world have to come nearly to an end for us to kind of get woken up and shaken up like this? And yet it seems to work. Where can our readers, listeners, find your work?
So right now with our first exhibit launch, it's all of the work is on my Instagram and on the artist Instagram, because we had a social campaign as well. But I'm actually in the process of redoing my website, and I'm creating like a one page with just dedicated to artists against anti-Semitism. And I'm actually going to shout out my friend who's redoing my website. His name is Schneer Smith. He's incredible. So I'm very excited to launch that soon. But as of now, it's pretty much just my social media.
Zusha Golden on
Zusha
Instagram.
Golden. Yeah, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook if you're on there. And yeah.
Some of us are still on Facebook. All
Yeah,
right, well, Zusha, thank you for sharing your journey with us. I think that, you know, this one story speaks to so many different people are on a journey quite similar. And, you know, it doesn't matter kind of where they started, but I think we're kind of all going to a more connected and more proud place. And, you know, thank you for using this opportunity to speak up for the Jews, to be a proud Jew, to try to rouse non-Jews to stand up and do the right thing. And we wish you continued hatzlacha.
thank you very much, Allison. I appreciate you having me. It's been really nice.
Pleasure. And you can catch us same time, same place next week. Bye-bye.